everyone, and welcome to not only the Damage Report, but the St. Patrick's Day edition of the Damage Report. I temporarily wore green. This is not just my like dungeon master cloak. This is,
sure,
this is for the holiday, but I am gonna take it off because it's already very hot. So that's one exciting part of the day. The other exciting part of today's episode of the Damage Report is Francesca Fiorentini, fresh off her East Coast tour. Welcome back, Francesca.
Well, good to be back with the luck of the Irish. Too bad I'm not Irish.
You're not.
I'm Chinese and Italian, which is why I've got coronavirus. That's right. I've got yeah, mother effing coronavirus, John. I'm going to stop with the accent because I don't want to offend.
That's true. You're way past that already. Here is the thing, everyone. Francesca's back from the East Coast and she just said that she had coronavirus. Now, she is what I call a jokester. She's known for her jokes,
sure,
making people laugh. But to be very clear, this is not a joke.
Nope.
It's not a sketch or a skit. It's real.
No, dude, I got a whole thing of tissues. I'm going to be having sneezing fits throughout this. Guys, I got the pangolin panzance, all right? It finally came for me. New York gave it to me, and I will find you in the millions and millions of people. I'll find you. I will hunt you and your family down.
Yeah.
All right. Here's the thing. I was very safe in New York, but clearly not safe enough. But now as mask mandates are dropping all over the place, people are freely coughing into each other's mouths. I figured, why not? Let's do it.
It's a popular trend on TikTok.
It was a challenge.
A cough on my tonsils challenge.
Ugh, nope. I know. I wanted to be cool.
Shouldn't have done that.
And now I'm sick. And here's what I will say. It blows. But I'm so glad I have 3 shots of the vaccine. Because I can only imagine how much worse this would be if I had not been triple vaxxed. Like, wait, it's not in my lungs. It's not in my throat. It's just a bad cold. And I'm like hot and cold. I'm feverish. Yeah. You know?
So to be clear, the fact that she got it for some who don't care about COVID and never have and never thought we should take it responsible, they would say, well, then what was the difference about the vaccine and the booster? No, but like the fact that she's upright, relatively attached to reality, that is we'll all see. A testament. I mean, I don't want to speak too much for you, but
the fact that John could guilt trip me into doing this show.
Okay, so let's address that. Okay, I wasn't actually crying, I was pretending to cry. So everyone, I want you to understand that Francesca is a very much a trooper, that she is doing this despite feeling not great. And it was a chaotic situation, but we are very glad to have you here. Not just in general and not just because we value your contributions and the show is much better when you're on, but also for one or two special reasons that will eventually become clear that I wanted to have you on specifically on today. Okay. But anyway, yes, Francesca does have COVID. She is, as you can tell, she is sick, but she's doing a lot better than she would if she had not taken it seriously. So everyone, if for some reason you are a diehard fan, daily watcher of the Damage Report, and you haven't gotten vaccinated or boosted, consider doing it. Anyway, and we hope you get better soon, Franny.
Thank you.
But everyone,
bear with me for this hour.
Exactly. Super fast though, how did the event go? You did a live event in New York. That's where someone infected you.
Perhaps. I did a lot of live events in New York, so I don't really know. Once again, we'll hunt you down, find your address and the addresses of your grandparents and their grandparents and your children's children. No. It was great. It was really fun. The Bituation Room was super fun. A lot of Dragon Squad, a lot of TYT fam. And also, it's really exciting because now the Bituation Room is part of the TYT podcast network. So I wanted to announce that to you all, let you know that, I mean, it doesn't really make a big difference other than like we're now even more BFFs than we were before.
Exactly.
And I'm really happy to be part of it.
Now we're BFF. That's awesome. And Brooke in the chat has christened it the Sicuation Room.
Dude, just
keeps
on going.
Anyway, well, very exciting. I'm sure there will be future live events, everyone. So, you know, stay tuned. Maybe you'll get to see one.
Maybe
you too.
Maybe never again. Maybe that was it.
Yeah. Anyway, aside from the regrettable health updates, we have so much to talk about. Not only updates on what's happening in Ukraine, the historic comparisons in terms of how bad this is going for Russia, I find to be so fascinating. We're gonna break some down for you. We've got Marjorie Greene advocating for apparently unconditional Ukrainian surrender. So that's exciting. A little bit of consequences for Kyrsten Sinema. We'll evaluate whether they're good enough to satisfy us progressives, but not everything going her way. And then a whole lot more besides. A professor tries to sue his students potentially. A guy freaks out over something that happens while he checked out at a CVS. We got a lot to talk about. So everyone, I want you to buckle up and get ready. Hit the like button, share the stream so the people know we're live. And you can send us comments and Francesca and I will respond. Well, I will respond and whatever's left of Francesca will respond.
Yep.
Very exciting. With all that said, Francesca, are you ready to talk about some news?
Sure.
Okay, in that case, I guess we will, starting with this.
Да, безусловно. Они будут пытаться делать ставку на так называемую пятую колонну, на национал-предателей, на тех, кто зарабатывает деньги здесь, у нас, а живет там. И живет даже не в географическом смысле этого слова, а по своим мыслям, по своему рабскому сознанию. Я совсем не осуждаю тех, у кого вилла в Майами или на французской ривьере. Кто не может обойтись без фуагра, устриц или так называемых гендерных свобод. Но проблема абсолютно не в этом.
Okay, so don't get it twisted. That is scary stuff when an authoritarian leader of a country like Russia is ranting about national traitors who have a slave consciousness that are, like, whether they live in Russia or not, that are traitors to Russia because they want oysters and geese and so-called gender freedoms. Because never forget, he, like most Republicans in America, will never miss an opportunity to demonize the LGBTQ community. So he is ranting about this, trying to get Russians to start looking inward at other people who might be causing all the bad things that are happening. And that is what this is really about. We're gonna play a bit more of Putin's rant there, but this is an attempt to deflect from the horrendous situation of the Russian invasion of Ukraine. We've got updates on that that are amazing. But first, a bit more of his attempted call to arms to get people to root out traitors in their midst.
А повторю в том, что многие из таких людей по своей сути ментально находятся именно там, а не здесь, не с нашим народом, не с Россией. Это и есть, по их мнению, признак принадлежности к высшей касте, к высшей расе. Подобные люди готовы и мать родную продать, только бы им разрешили сидеть в прихожей у этой самой высшей касты.
Okay, so we're gonna get Francesca's commentary in one moment, and we will reveal what it is that he's trying to deflect from. But let's pause for 1 second on all of what you just saw. And if you're on the podcast, I apologize. He's talking about people being cast traitors and wanting to be accepted by higher classes and all that. This is effectively, as Media Matters has pointed out, it's like a Tucker Carlson montage. This is a guy saying the elites, the rich are trying to manipulate you. Here's an inconvenient fact for Vladimir Putin. I mean, it's nice for him, but for his argument, it's inconvenient. According to multiple reports, Vladimir Putin just might be the richest person in the world. Back in 2017, he had an estimated net worth of $200 billion stemming from his alleged control over significant chunks of Russia's energy sector. And he also presides over an inner circle with vast wealth of their own. And while he heckled those who have a villa in Miami or the French Riviera, he's got his own palace on the Black Sea, a lifestyle of yachts, cars, and reported secret girlfriends. He is uber wealthy, all of it stolen from the Russian people, who he is now trying to delude, as Tucker Carlson and the rest of the right does, into looking for traitors in their midst rather than identifying the theft that's already happened. Francesca, what do you think?
No, it's this like, two things. One, maybe don't have a former KGB officer as your president. You know, he's gonna see everyone as an enemy of the people or not, with us or against us. And honestly, we've had that here. We've been within striking distance of that. I mean, I just uttered like a Bushism, right, from the early 2000s. But this is a reason why we shouldn't have like former CIA, former FBI in high positions of power. And we do, because this is there, when you create, your entire idea is creating like enemies of the state, then everyone becomes an enemy of a state. So that's number one. It's like Putin is this like look into a future that the United States potentially could have, right? What happens when you have a kleptocratic, autocratic, government that steals everything for itself? Like, what does that look like? And secondly, yeah, my man has like palaces that are worth billions and billions of dollars with weird rooms that we don't want to know about, and the people who are in them don't want to know about them either. Like, there's just a lot going on. So again, you're right. Like, it is, the guy has always been this person, and I'm like, it's fascinating to me to see what so many countries, including our own, could potentially be. And I'm serious about this. Like, you know, down the line, a smarter Trump, like, we're looking at Putin. Anyway, let's talk about his failure.
Exactly. And we're on that path, but we just don't want to get even worse into it. But okay, so it is clear when he's talking about foie gras and oysters, that's not actually what he's worried about. Let's speculate for a second together about what it is that he might be worried about. Is it about his disastrous invasion of Ukraine? Here's something to put it into perspective. We talked about a comparison to the Russian invasion of Afghanistan back in the 80s. Here's another one. In 36 days of fighting on Iwo Jima during World War II, nearly 7,000 Marines were killed. It's considered such a massive loss of life in such a short period of time that we still memorialize it to this day. 20 days after Putin invaded Ukraine, his military has already lost more soldiers than the US lost on Iwo Jima, according to American intelligence estimates. And it's considered, by the way, again, grains of salt all over the place, but it's considered a conservative side of the estimate. More than 7,000 Russian troop deaths, greater than the number of American troops, by the way, killed in over 20 years in Iraq and Afghanistan combined. Two decades of a terrible quagmire, a debacle in the Middle East, devastating for two decades. In 20 days, they've already lost more soldiers. The soldiers dead, far more, obviously injured at this point. By the way, the Pentagon says that a 10% casualty rate, including dead and wounded, for a single unit renders it unable to carry out combat related tasks. If we assume that there's about 150,000 Russian troops now involved invading Ukraine, their current casualties, when including the estimated 14 to 21,000 that are injured, are near that level of units being unable to accomplish their objectives. And by the way, the Russian military has also lost at least three generals. By the way, they sent in about 20, okay, to give you perspective. That was to boost morale. It doesn't necessarily boost morale, though, when you lose a significant percentage of your generals in 3 weeks there. What do you think, Francesca?
I mean, it's part and parcel of his attitude about the Russian people generally, right? Which is, as you mentioned, he's been stealing from them hand over fist. He's been propagandizing to them, lying to them, and now he's using their children as cannon fodder. So it's no surprise that he doesn't care about the casualties in Russia. I mean, two things. One, he doesn't care about the casualties, I don't think. I don't think that, you know, look, we've got terrible legacies of war in this country. But there is an acknowledgement, especially I think in the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, of the American casualties. Not necessarily as much of the Iraqi and Afghani casualties, but as of American casualties. I don't think Putin has that same empathy for his own people, clearly. And then, you know, number two is a point that got lost by the pangolin virus in my body. But the point is, you know, like, he's gonna keep going. Like, it doesn't matter, because if he can control the messaging, and that was the thing about Vietnam, that, you know, the United States could not control the messaging anymore. We had film, everyone could see, it was like a lot, you know, it was overexposure in terms of like all the casualties. Russia doesn't have that, right? Russia is able to clamp down on the images that are coming into Russian people. So if they died, it was valiantly. It was on a very targeted mission. It wasn't to essentially topple a democratic government, a neighboring, you know, autonomous state.
You might be right, but I do think that there are a lot more potential avenues for that information getting in. I think that they have got a lot of state control over media, and did long before this war began. But we'll have to see. And also, look, I don't think that Putin is like losing sleep over the dead Russian soldiers who should have never been there, who probably have no interest in this war, don't even know what they've been sent there to do. But if it does come back, if it hurts him politically, then he could care about that. Like, you could be a full on sociopath and still worry about the consequences of your actions, if they'll have effects on you. And by the way, you might think, oh, well, John already ran through the bad news. No, there's more bad news, by the way. Three confirmed general deaths. On Wednesday, Ukrainian officials reported that a fourth general, Major General Oleg Mityaev, the commander of the 150th Motorized Rifle Division had been killed in fighting. I don't think that that has been confirmed independently, but that is what they are saying. In at least one instance, by the way, the Ukrainians apparently intercepted a general's call, geolocated it, and attacked his location, killing him and his staff. If that news gets out, how terrified are you going to be being an officer in the Russian invading forces right now, desperately trying to communicate for guidance about what you're supposed to do in the midst of a long-standing issue with logistics and troop movements and all that? And now you feel like if you actually radio in for guidance, that you could end up being killed too. And by the way, maybe as a result of all this, certainly of the death, the Pentagon says as of yesterday, Russian advances continue to be stalled near the capital in Kyiv, and those forces have not made any significant advances towards the city. Also, by the way, Russia's state TV has a number of their personalities and behind the camera people who have been resigning from it. So in terms of the control over the message, like, they'll replace those people, but someone might notice that a bunch of them are resigning. And also, in addition to many super yachts which have been seized internationally, there is a super yacht belonging to a Russian oligarch and a former KGB agent that's been stuck in Norway for over a month because suppliers are refusing to fuel it. Which is a little bit petty, but I'll take it. I'll take it.
Oh yeah, I still think, you know, as has been mentioned before, that those super yachts should be housing Ukrainian refugees, and it should just be a wild party, you know, buffet.
Constant party.
Let's just do it up.
Just fill up the yacht with like balls and make it a big floating ball pit for Ukrainian child refugees. Get them in there.
I'm into it.
Exactly.
The one thing I will say is that, you know, if there is a silver lining, and it's really hard to see that right now, given all the death and given all the destruction, but that Russia itself, you know, I agree that I'm of two minds. While Putin has utter control over a lot of the propaganda and the state machinery and is already locking people up for holding blank signs in protest, that there are these leaks and cracks, as you mentioned, in this system and in that sort of grasp. And also that I don't know if his regime is going to survive this war politically. Like, you know, and I hope that this breeds and spawns like a new day for Russian. I mean, let's be honest, like democracy. I'm sorry, I don't mean that in a, like a Western imperialist way. I mean that in a you know, freedom way, like. You know, people get to vote and then not get punished for it, exactly. And then not get sent off to die. So hopefully, I mean, if we can see that light at the end of the tunnel.
Hopefully, hopefully. And we're gonna turn to a little bit of that hope in just one second. But first, look, I was open about the fact that on the eve of the invasion of Ukraine, I didn't think that it would happen. I honestly, for a week or two, had been saying that I thought Russia could accomplish many of its political goals without a full-on invasion. That would be devastating for it. The devastation turned out to be true. My prediction was wrong. I freely admit that. But I think that while we should admit when we're wrong with our predictions, we should also acknowledge those who got it right, especially if they got it right way in advance of it happening. And so I want to take you back to, I believe, January 3rd. This is like 7-8 weeks before the invasion, and take a look at a brief excerpt from one of our members only top 10 lists.
But number four, we haven't really talked about it, but it's like foreign policy related, but Russia's totally gonna invade Ukraine. Like,
oh, geez.
That's definitely going to happen. And Biden's gonna not do anything about it because, like, why would we wanna start a war?
And what would he do?
And what would he do? And like, there's already sanctions, but Putin doesn't give up, you know, so.
So look, that's kind of what the conversation is like these days, Francesca, but that was January 3rd. That was just our.
Why am I dancing? I'm like, dance. This is the most morbid.
It is.
I was right. Oh God.
But you were right. That was our 10 gut feelings about bad stuff that could happen in 2022. And you nailed it way in advance.
I didn't have me getting COVID on that. Cause I was like, I'm great. And COVID's gross. Like, I'm made of rainbows and COVID's made of gross.
So it'll be separate, but
yeah.
But no, you did get that.
And again, and this is for like a broader discussion, but I am so glad at the diplomatic steps and the sanctions, the specific and targeted sanctions that are now being used by not only, you know, Biden administration, but I think other countries as well. And I think something Bill McKibben said, and this is really important, obviously, climate reporter and writer and analyst, which is essentially oil companies that have been working with Putin all this time, as it's done crime after crime after crime, whether it was the invasion of Crimea or others, you know, that it showed that it was leading to this point, that they were giving him money, they were making deals, and that was a-okay with our government. And it's like, when are we going to understand that weaponizing renewable energy is a national security issue that will keep us safer and will punish autocrats that rely on oil money. Meanwhile, and look, I don't, you know, meanwhile, when our one autocrat doesn't give us money, we're like, oh, let's go to Saudi Arabia. Please, yep. please. Yep. We go to Venezuela. Please. I'm not saying that Maduro is the same thing as Bin Salman, but I'm still saying this is so absurd. This is so absurd that we keep on going to like oil rich autocrat. And all we need to do is actually utilize our like technology and renewables. Anywho.
I agree. And look, the other side has been trying to push us in the exact opposite direction. They understand that we are in thrall to autocratic oil producing dictatorships. And their solution is just, oh, well, no, we should still be on oil. We should still be involved in this international market that can suddenly screw over everyone. We should just make a little bit more. And they'll pretend that that's gonna solve the problem. All it produces is a little bit more oil for the global market. The price might go down slightly. It's not like the US government packages up the oil drilled in North Dakota and then ships it directly to taxpayers in cities around the country. That's not how that actually works.
No, and meanwhile, they have no understanding of all the, you know, traders that are like banking on an oil depletion of oil who are driving up the real prices. Mm-hmm. You got Jen Psaki up there going like, I don't know, ask BP and Shell why the hell the oil prices are so high, because they could definitely lower them.
They could, they're just profitable.
Exactly, and like that's again, our corporatocracy means government is taking a back seat to corporations. And hey, what an amazing moment to learn that just right in our faces.
Exactly. Okay, everybody, it is time for our first break, but we're gonna check in on a congresswoman who is calling for Ukraine to surrender wholly in the face of this invasion. We'll have that for you after this. Okay, everybody, lots of messages coming in. Thank you everyone for your support. We're gonna get to more in just a little bit, but first, hold on to your butts everyone and consider yourself warned as we launch into this.
This is an 8-year long smoldering conflict in which peace agreements have been routinely violated by both sides. It concerns a country in which Joe Biden, Nancy Pelosi and Mitt Romney have direct financial interest. A country which government only exists because of the Obama State Department helped to overthrow the previous regime. The ugly truth is that America is in no shape to throw herself into another foreign conflict.
Okay, so already from Congresswoman Marjorie Greene, you can hear a combination of conspiracy theories about Hunter Biden and Joe Biden owning businesses in Ukraine or whatever, as well as a number of just straight out Russian talking points. Pretending as if this invasion it's not anything new. It's just a part of a long-standing conflict. It's not one of the most unprecedented illegal invasions of a sovereign state in literally decades or anything like that. So she's just spreading conspiracy theories and Putin talking points, but that by itself would be very much par for the course. We expect that out of Congresswoman Marjorie Greene. But take a look at this next video and see what she then calls for Ukraine to do.
If we truly care about suffering and death on our television screens, we cannot fund more of it by sending money and weaponry to Ukraine to fight a war they cannot possibly win. The only effect of more arms and more money from America will be to prolong the war and magnify human suffering. I don't know about you, but I don't want to be responsible for creating even more refugees and orphans in an already traumatized and dysfunctional world.
Okay, so she has learned enough about the response to this war to know that she is supposed to pretend that she cares about human suffering, that she cares about the civilians being killed, the needless loss of life of the soldiers and the refugees that are being created. But she is saying they can't possibly win. She is saying we shouldn't help them and they shouldn't try, Francesca.
I mean, truly it is insane to hear, as you said, Kremlin talking points coming out of right wingers in the United States. And again, this is like, tell me you're being funded by Putin without telling me you're being funded by Putin. I don't want to hear any more I've got Russiagate syndrome BS after this. Are you kidding me? Are we not supposed to listen and see and witness what the hell is going on? We're supposed to ignore all of the ties between the GOP and Russian oligarchs? We're supposed to ignore like the amount that of collusion, the dark money that was funneled through the NRA. Like, do we have to go back? Manafort sending the voting rolls. Hello, but that's past history. This is present. And you've got Marjorie Taylor Greene saying this kind of crap that, again, this is like a Putin meme that he can no longer like spread throughout Facebook or whatever, but he doesn't need to. And the stuff that like really bothers me is the State Department funded like government of Ukraine, like the US State Department, like, cause you know what that feels like? It feels like some really bad leftist take, anti-imperialist in heavy quotations take that you'd see on the left now being parroted by the right. Dude, we're talking about Yanukovych, right? This is Putin's guy who was president of Ukraine, won under shady pretenses, spawned an incredible a movement called the Orange Revolution in response to his illegitimate presidency, right? And the Orange Revolution was not a product of the State Department in the United States. It was not a product of NATO and the EU. That's what Putin wants you to believe. And so believing that is taking away agency from all Ukrainians to decide their future, which by the way, up until this point, they weren't like 150% NATO or 150% EU. There was a like, you know, there was a plethora, a differentiation of opinion within the country. Yeah. So anyway, that's the stuff that chills me more than anything else, is to see the way that like these BS talking points from the from like bad leftists and the BS talking points from the right are coalescing. And honestly, are they all being paid by the same people? I don't know.
Yeah, look, I don't think that there has to be any direct payment or whatever. I think that ideologically they think that pushing the same exact talking points can benefit them. And financially, not directly financially, but I think that there are definitely financial benefits to be had. Look, for her, she's pretending she doesn't want us to send these weapons. She literally invested in Raytheon and Lockheed immediately prior to the contracts being signed. I mean, so again, I don't even buy that she's being honest there. I think that all of these personalities on the right, whether they're in media and politics, and I am starting to believe that it makes no difference which side of this you're on. It's effectively the same thing. They do and say the same things. They are all trying to figure out what line do we take to not seem like the cold-hearted bastards that we are and find a way to attack the left or Joe Biden over the tragedy that Putin has instigated. And they come at it in different directions, but she thinks she's found her way. Very briefly, I want to go to
John. Hang on, really, I want to push back. You think she's smart enough to say something like the State Department funded Ukrainian government?
No, I think she's dumb enough to believe things that she read on some right-wing website or something. Because these are not even sophisticated versions of those talking points. It's like the most base level, delivered poorly. She's not even good at reading the teleprompter propaganda that was put in front of her there.
No, it's true. It's true.
Anyway, I hope that she is not influential on this because as terrible as all of what's going on is, at the very least, our government has figured out a way to try to give the Ukrainian people the best chance of not just being absorbed into Russia without drawing us into an all-out war that could turn nuclear at a, you know, at a second's notice. And that should be the goal. Her wanting them to surrender, and then she goes on to say, we're not gonna play the video. She pretends that then they just turn to diplomacy. Like I wish that we could just instantly have a diplomatic solution right now. But Russia is not going to, if you just give them the country and then say, okay, now let's debate, you just give it back to us. That's not how that actually works. the only way that Putin is going to allow for some sort of withdrawal is if the invasion is hurting him, if it's costing him economically and militarily. There's no guarantee that even that will work, but that is the only plausible path to anything like Ukrainian independence coming out of this. I don't know if she's smart enough to know that, but I hope that nobody is dumb enough to listen to her. Anyway, that's enough of her. We got other important stuff to talk about. God, get her out of Congress, people. Let's jump into more insanity, everyone. Just yesterday, more than a dozen House Republicans voted against legislation that was designed to promote public education about the internment of the Japanese American during World War II. They just didn't like it. Now, who's on that list? Oh, you're gonna be shocked to find out that the 406 to 16 vote had these noes: Lauren Boebert, Mo Brooks, Louis Gohmert, Marjorie Taylor Greene, Thomas Massey, Chip Roy. It's the dumb squad, and they are together once again. What was there something radical about this that they felt compelled to vote against more education? The bill would have created a Japanese American World War II history network administered by the National Park Service to connect historical sites associated with the mass internment of Japanese Americans after the attack on Pearl Harbor launched by Japan's military. Bear in mind, if you don't know this, about 120,000 people of Japanese descent were forced to live in detention camps as a result of a 1942 executive order that FDR signed. Most of those people were American citizens. It is one of the blackest marks on the record of a country that has no shortage of them. And these 16 know-nothings want to make sure that our kids know as little as possible about where we came from. What do you think, Francesca?
Like, it passed, right?
Why it was 406 to 16. They just wanted to go on record as not liking it.
Go on record saying, I don't know anything about this and neither should you.
Yeah.
See, if I don't know it, if Alex Jones didn't talk about it, then it didn't happen. Like, what? It's so gross. And also, half of those people aided and abetted insurrectionists. So, buddy, according to the Constitution, you're out of here. Get out of here. Like, I don't ever want to see Mo Brooks and Louis Gohmert's name anywhere ever. Yeah. Like, how are these people still in office? What are you saying by sticking your neck out like that on this? Is this their like force the vote? Is this their like, we're gonna vote for it even if it doesn't happen? Like, just don't make white people feel bad about our history that, and or maybe it's just straight up like, hey, maybe internment wasn't such a bad thing. Like, honestly, that's it matters now. At a time when, of course, they don't care about this because, you know, they're all like okay with any kind of Russian propaganda. But when we're doing ridiculous things in terms of like, you know, firing Russian conductors from their jobs, you know, or just weird anti-Russian stuff that is like, this is not the solution. Don't we understand Russians are also victims of this war and everything that's going on?
Exactly. Yeah. When we talk about the Russian soldiers that are dying, I wish that not a single one of them did. I wish that they weren't there at all. And I hate the fact that people are rooting out Russian products and demonizing individual Russians in America. We need to remember the worst ways we've responded to international crises. We need to learn about that so that we don't bring it forward into situations like this. But they're much more interested in, look, they think that it's critical race theory to teach about the internment. That's all that this is. And they want to reassure their base that they hate and fear and suspect Asian people. All sorts of people, not just Asian people, but also Asian people. Even though, and this is an amazing coincidence, it's the 1 year anniversary of the horrific Atlanta spa shootings. There were gatherings all throughout the country over this. If you don't remember, on March 16th of last year, a gunman opened fire at three separate spas in Atlanta, killing 8 people, including 6 Asian women. The shooter was sentenced to life in prison for 4 of the deaths. And since then, by the way, or in the last couple of years, according to Stop AAPI Hate, there were 6,273 reported incidents of harassment, assault, and discrimination last year. That's up like something like 50% from 2020, with 2/3 involving verbal harassment, 1 in 6 physical assault. Women and non-binary people together reported about twice as many incidents as men. So this is not just history, this is very much our present. It is a deadly situation, we need people to learn about it.
Yeah, I mean, if COVID you know, were happening in the 30s, 40s, like, and you had a president like Donald Trump calling it the China virus. Who's to say that Chinese people wouldn't be interned? Who's to say? Are we so sure that that wouldn't have happened? You know, and honestly, again, we are suffering from the impact of people like Marjorie Taylor Greene, Lauren Boebert, but also really Donald Trump from echoing this poison, and Fox News from echoing this poison into everyone's ears day in and day out. And it is horrific, and it's just incredible, like, that women and non-binary people are like number one targets. Like, cool, yeah. Yeah, no, please pick on, you know, the most vulnerable of our community.
Exactly, it's just disgusting. And it's bad enough to have those people out there harassing everyone. I don't want them to have representation that agrees with them on these sorts of things.
Yeah.
Anyway, with that said, we are gonna take a break. We come back, Kyrsten Sinema, some interesting revelations from an upcoming book, but also some of her big donors apparently questioning their relationship with her. We'll give you that after this. Anyway, everyone, let's jump into some more news. And this is gonna start off rough, but it's gonna get feel good. That's the promise I make to you. Let's talk about it. Are people finally starting to wise up to Kyrsten Sinema? Are the financial backers, who are the only people that she actually cares about, finally dropping away? Turns out, yes, in some cases, and perhaps more coming. And we will get to that in just one sec. But first, there are revelations about Kyrsten Sinema that should cause even more popular rage against her. This is coming out of a new book from New York Times reporters Jonathan Martin and Alexander Burns called This Will Not Pass. It says that Sinema has been talking up GOP leadership while mocking President Biden. And Biden, in turn, I think according to her, simply doesn't understand Kyrsten Sinema. Quote, one person close to the president likened Biden's perplexity at Sinema to his difficulty grasping his grandchildren's use of TikTok. He wanted to relate, but he just didn't get quite how to do it. I don't think that Kyrsten Sinema is all that complicated. She's annoying and frustrating, Francesca, but she's not like a complicated new app. She's just corrupt. She's a sellout in every way.
Biden, she's a sellout. You've been dealing with sellouts your entire career. Some may argue if you don't do more, you yourself may be a sellout. You know, you can sort of sellout whisper to one another, for the love of God, get some of your agenda done. Mm-hmm. Just a little, like just because she wears a sleeveless dress and like sometimes wears purple wigs and has like red glasses, that just makes up for the lack of a personality.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like, and by the way, you could do that if you want, but that doesn't make her like a special just because you're extravagant. Okay. I've got a green cape on now. No, politicians don't understand me. What's my ideology? You think you know, but you don't know.
This isn't
a night at the opera. That's cosplay. That's all that is.
You have like a phantom half mask. You don't know how I will vote.
Wait until they get a load of me as a lobbyist. Yeah, no, you're not that complicated, Kyrsten Sinema. You're a massive phony and a sellout who lied about being a progressive to hoodwink progressives into supporting you, but you could not even hide it for a little bit. You don't even do the bare minimum to keep some of your constituents still supporting you. They hate your guts and hopefully they will kick you out soon. A little bit more of what she said, by the way, in the book, apparently during a fundraiser hosted by a group of Republican heavy lobbyists. Weird that you do a fundraiser with Republican lobbyists. She praised Kevin McCarthy, House Minority Leader, Representative Andy Biggs, who pushes the big lie, who literally says that Biden didn't win the election, that he's an illegitimate president. She said, I love Andy Biggs. I know some people think he's crazy, but that's just because they don't know him. No, I know him, and he ain't that complicated. Doesn't even wear purple wigs. I think I've got him figured out, actually, and he's the worst. She also told the Republicans that several moderate Democrats were, quote, hiding behind my skirt. That I buy. I think that is incredibly honest. She is horrible and unrepentantly so, but I don't think that she is by far the only one who would have worked to tank Biden's agenda and all of that. But anyway, I'm gonna give you one more thing, Francesca, before you react. The book points out that she, quote, became the first ever lawmaker to argue with White House aides when they asked her to wear a face mask in the company of the president, repeatedly asking why that was necessary when she'd been vaccinated. But that's Lauren Boebert stuff. That's Marjorie Greene stuff. You're supposed to be responsible. Joe Biden is 173 years old. You cannot bring germs near Joe Biden. If they ask you to wear a mask for you to get yet another meeting with the president, I would consider that the least that you can do.
No, dude. I saw the other day, no one was wearing a mask around him. They were like shaking his hand and stuff. And I just like, again, I wear masks mostly and I still got sick and mostly being like, I'll take it down and like, I took photos, whatever. The point is, like, it's still out there. There are breakthrough cases. And yeah, Joe Biden, you know, we need Joe Biden. Cause like, yeah, we need it.
She's just awful.
But in terms of Kyrsten Sinema, this is, I mean, it is the ego of a senator who feels they are untouchable, like so many senators do. I'm sorry. This is just her expression of her own corruption, her cavalier nature of saying she knows she's, you know, got enough money, bought and sold by corporations, and she's not loyal to anyone. Senators often, sadly, are loyal to themselves and their own power, and their one goal is to maintain power. Yeah. And so everything we're reading, it's like, why do we treat her? And again, it's a little bit sexist in my opinion to treat her like she's some sort of enigma, like she's different. Oh, and not to say nothing of people being like dumbfounded who by bisexual people, like get over it. Bi people are people. Yeah. There are many bi people who are not Kyrsten Sinema. Like,
yeah,
it's not an enigma, it's power.
Yeah. Yeah, bi people get to be enigmas and mysterious, and they also get to be normies. They get to be boring. They get to be whatever they want. It is a weird, it's like a fetishizing or an exoticizing of it that I don't like. But anyway, I promised you, dear viewer, dear listener, that there were some consequences coming. And what do you know? We do actually have those. A big old group has put together a letter putting pressure on some of the big financial backers of Kyrsten Sinema to get them to back off. We have this. The ForAll.org says we're proud to have several of our leaders signed on to this letter from over 100 Arizona LGBTQ plus leaders and national allies calling on Human Rights Campaign to pull support from Kyrsten Sinema unless she reverses her position on the filibuster and urging HRC donors to withhold funds until they do. So saying you shouldn't give to her. And by the way, all of you don't give to Human Rights Campaign if they're supporting people that are stopping any progress on what's needed for you to, you know, have a safe and satisfying life. The Arizona Coalition and the filibuster helped organize the letter. They also called on donors, so that is powerful. 100 Arizona-based LGBTQ activists and national supporters. In the letter, they say the toll of Sinema's obstruction, which HRC continues to tacitly support and thus enable for your constituents, is growing each day. The filibuster blocking popular legislation backed by all or nearly all Democrats to address the urgent issues of reproductive justice, immigrant rights, gun violence, police reform, workers' right to organize, raise the minimum wage, and many more. And you could go way beyond that. She's blocking all of it by pretending that she cares about the filibuster. She doesn't care about the filibuster. So that's what they're trying to do. They're trying to get Human Rights Campaign to back off. But Emily's List, formerly one of Sinema's largest financial backers, one of the biggest donors for the senator, said in January that it would cut her off unless she got behind ending the filibuster, which she hasn't. NARAL, as well as liberal groups such as Latino Victory Fund, League of Conservation Voters, Black Voters Matter Fund, have also taken similar positions. So this is the next step for Human Rights Campaign, but there are also some very big, well-funded groups that have said if you don't change on the filibuster, which she hasn't, they're done with her. So maybe that'll be a financial sting that she'll actually feel, Francesca.
No, she doesn't need their money because she's now sucking up to like grocery lobbyists and all kinds of financial institutions. Like she's got new people. She doesn't need even Emily's List, which is arguably not that progressive, right? They've supported a lot of candidates who are not really for working class issues, but their one issue obviously is abortion rights, which I think is important. So like she doesn't need these people anymore. And she's not up for re-election until 2025. Like her term doesn't end then. So like she can successfully tank and make Biden a one-term president and be fine. And maybe she'll survive that election and he won't.
Yeah, and maybe if she doesn't, maybe that's not even the plan. She wants to hold on to power, but elected office is not the only sort of power for someone as corrupt as her.
Yeah, she'll have a lifestyle brand. She'll have like a whole, you know, Target will be like, oh my God, let's do a midlife crisis
Enigma
line. Enigma, like manic pixie dream girl politician, girl boss by. Yeah.
Is there a manic pixie nightmare girl? Is that a thing? Because that's definitely her. Anyway, we got one more thing to get into, and we only have a few more minutes, so let's jump into this. You might have thought that the degradation of Mike Pence by Donald Trump, the damage that he can do, has reached its peak, that there's nothing more that he could do after all the suffering of Mike Pence. But no, President Donald Trump has also ruled out choosing him again to be his running mate. He's had his fill of Pence. He's not interested in him anymore. He said, I don't think the people would accept it. He told the Washington Examiner just yesterday. Yes, it's all about the base. They're just giving the base what they want. Anyway, he said, Mike and I had a very good relationship, except for the very important factor that took place at the end. We had a very good relationship. I haven't spoken to him in a long time. That important factor that took place at the end, by the way, was your attempt to get him to do what he can't, which is overthrow the election. And when he refused to do that, you unleashed your bloodthirsty cultists on him to try to kill him where he stands. And months and months later, after we already knew that that had happened, that horror, that unacceptable horror, when he was asked about it by John Carl, this is what Trump had to say.
During that siege, were you worried about
his
safety?
No, I thought he was well protected, and I had heard that he was in good shape. Mm-hmm. No, because I had heard he was in very good shape. But no,
you heard those chants. That was terrible. I mean, it was, you know, the
he could have. Well, the people were very angry.
They're saying hang Mike.
Because it's common sense, John. It's common sense that you're supposed to protect. How can you, if you know a vote is fraudulent? Right?
Yeah.
How can you pass on a fraudulent vote to Congress?
He was just reminded that they tried to kill the guy. And he said, you know, it's common sense. It's common sense. They're going to be mad. They're going to be mad. So anyway, he survived Mike Pence. Now he's not going to be chosen to be his running mate. Honestly, Francesca, maybe that's a good thing from Pence's point of view.
Yeah. He wants to go back with mother and pretend like none of this ever happened. And just drink his hot milk and like rock in his chair and, you know, like, you know, feed the little fly that definitely lives behind his ear. Mm-hmm. And just, you know, it was all a nightmare. It was all a dream. It's amazing to me. And again, we're talking about this during Russia's war on Ukraine, but how Putin-esque and Trumpian, like you see the relationship, right? That's some thing that Putin would say. Oh, well, the people were angry. They were defending me. I don't care if they're coming for my top guy, my vice president, my official. Why? Because I'm number one. I'm top dog, right?
Yeah.
And I don't care if I might kill you myself. I mean, Trump's not there and we're not there, thankfully. But yeah, I don't know. What was Pence even planning on doing? Like, John, who do you think his running mate is going to be instead?
I don't know. Like, honestly, I would think he wouldn't do this because he's too weak. But if he were to tell DeSantis behind closed doors, I will make you my running mate. And then after 4 years of me, you have an easy run to be the next president. That would make it so that DeSantis wouldn't run against him. They're both popular on the right. That's, I think, the power move. But he doesn't have any power. He's a weak, scared little boy. So I don't think he's going to do it. Who do you think?
I'll be the transitional president. Is that what you mean?
Kind of, yeah.
Biden to Kamala. You're absolutely right. I think if he's smart, it's DeSantis. And oh God, yeah, I want to, I'm too sick to honestly entertain that idea.
Yeah.
It makes me a puke.
Yeah, you are sick. It might be unrelated, but yes, you are sick. Anyway, Pence, by the way, wants to run himself still. Good luck with that, buddy. Anyway, that is all the time we have for our first hour. So to those listening on the podcast, on the linear platform, thank you so much for watching our show. We really do appreciate that. But if you are on Twitch or on YouTube or on a members app, we've got a lot more to talk about, including, you know how like sometimes you go to check out and it'll ask you if you want to make a donation? We have a guy absolutely losing his mind over that. And then some interesting debates. So don't go anywhere. Maybe refill your coffee, make yourself a sandwich, because we got way more coming up right after this break.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.